Welcome to the Album Nerds Podcast with your hosts, Andy, Don, and Dude.
Let's get ready to record rumble.
It's the Album Nerds Podcast. I'm Dude. I got Don with me. Andy is not with us. He's off getting a BBL.
What's a BBL?
A Brazilian butt lift. Oh. You know, get that thing nice and plump. So he'll be back soon. Who knows what other adventures he'll be taking in the coming weeks. So, Don, we are trying something new this week. Head-to-head matchups of albums. How are you feeling about the prospect?
I don't know. We'll see how it goes.
Yeah. Maybe we won't do it again.
Yeah.
Well, so this is the Album Nerds Podcast. We love albums and the album format, and obviously any excuse to talk about them, categorize them, and best enjoy our time on this beautiful earth. We have a great show for you today. We'll be kicking the tires on our Record Rumbles series, where two classic albums enter the ring and go head-to-head and toe-to-toe. And as always, Don is going to ask a deep question. We'll have some shout-outs to some other albums and album-related items we're digging. And then we're going to spin the wheel of Albumgeddon instead of the wheel of musical discovery to find out the topic of our next Record Rumble. But until then,
let's get it on!
So today we are matching up two giants at their commercial peaks. So both of these bands rose from cult status to conquerors of the mainstream. And they're both albums that have prominent places in our music collections.
That's true.
Choose your fighter!
In this corner, weighing in with 3 million sold, layers of synths and heartache from the shadows of Crawley, England, it's the undisputed champion of melancholy, the architect of emotional devastation, The Cure's Disintegration. So this is the eighth studio album by The Cure, who is that is mainly the brainchild of Robert Smith, the singer-songwriter and guitarist with a supporting cast. It was released in May 1989, and it is, in fact, their best-selling album of all time.
Choose your fighter!
And in this corner, the heavy metal juggernaut from the Bay Area, the Kings of Thrash turned masters of the arena rock battlefield, selling a jaw-dropping 30 million copies worldwide. It's the band that made metal a household name in the 90s. Give it up for the mighty Metallica in their 1991 Colossus The Black Album. Metallica formed in Los Angeles in 1981 by drummer Lars Ulrich and vocalist James Hetfield, quickly rose to become one of the defining bands of heavy metal, pioneering the thrash metal movement and all things metal. The Black Album, as is so called, released in August of 1991, was their fifth studio album, marked a major stylistic shift for the band, embracing a more streamlined mid-tempo sound and tighter songwriting compared to their earlier thrash epics, produced by Bob Rock. Massive radio hits, which I don't think anyone expected, and a fear of repetition, feeling like thrash had been taken to its limits. More complex, melodic, but the average BPM is 114 as compared to 152 on their earlier albums, so it's still pretty damn fast and furious. Yeah. All right, we've done the introductions. It's fight time.
And here we go!
All right, so here we are, round one, opening cuts. The opening song of a great album should definitely capture your attention. It should set the tone for what's to come and draw you in, right? You know, that first song can mean everything. Back in the old days, you'd buy a CD, and if that first song didn't get you, you might just put it down and never listen again. So the goals are strike first, strike hard, come out swinging, and kick some ass. So Don, what are we doing here for opening songs?
All right. So The Cure's Disintegration opens with the song Plain Song.
Great title. Really draws you in.
I just feel like I'm just floating in a sea of synths.
I think you're setting yourself up for failure here, pal.
I don't know. This is, this song is just an explosion of of synthesizer. It's just this dreamy sonic experience, but it really does set the tone for the album. Yeah, so there's two dominant sounds on Disintegration. So you've got the layered synthesizers, and then you have the bass six, which is basically a six-string bass. It's tuned like a guitar, but I mean, most of the lead guitar parts on this album are actually a six-string bass played by Robert Smith. I know this is a great opener because I know when I used to make mixtapes for people and stuff, I always started with it. And it even has those little bells at the beginning that sort of let you know that something big is about to happen.
First of all, you'll take any opportunity to talk about the bass six every yes. time the Cure comes up. That's your thing. secondly, I think it's most important. What are the reviews on your mixtapes? I mean, did people continue to listen or did they turn it off after track one?
Huh. You know, I never received a lot of feedback.
Well, yeah, you're acting like that was proof that it's a great opener. I'm just saying. Yeah, I mean, it's kind of a tough entry point for me. I mean, I expect it to be melancholy, but it's like, I even if one word was uttered at the very beginning, if he even just said, plain song, this is plain song, prepare to cry. Maybe something, but it works. I mean, if you let yourself sink into it, that ding, 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 like that really does kind of take you away. It's like you're in I just picture some kind of like fog.
Yes.
Like a, you know, rainy, misty.
Yep.
Which I think I say every time we talk about The Cure because they're so good at painting that picture.
Yeah, that's good. I like the lyrics of it too because it's kind of like a conversation between mm-hmm. me and this person, and it's existential dread and physical decay. You know, Robert Smith was turning 30, you know, like he was, you know, on his deathbed or something.
Yeah.
But yeah, you know, he was really, I guess, you know, just struggling with aging and, you know, not being a young punk rocker anymore.
All right. Well, it's time for me to punch back with the opening song from Metallica's Black Album, Enter Sandman. That's even a boxer's name in Punch Out, man. All right, so that one was written by Kirk Hammett for the main riff, James Hetfield for the lyrics, and Lars Ulrich on the arrangements. Bob Rock encouraged a huge crushing guitar sound with layered takes, which they definitely nailed here. Hammett used a modified wah pedal for that eerie solo tone, and Lars actually suggested a riff change. It was more chuggy. So originally, it was going to be about, like, crib death.
Oh, jeez.
Yeah, like it was dark.
SIDS?
Yeah, SIDS. So they decided to shift and focus more generally on childhood fears and nightmares, which I think was a very smart move. But it does focus on fear, sleep with one eye open, gripping your pillow tight. I've done that for sure as a kid in particular. I used to pull the blanket over my head and just leave a like breathing hole, especially after watching The Wizard of Oz. But like it was huge. It was a huge single on the charts. It redefined who Metallica was in the eyes of Metallica fans and made non-Metallica fans notice who the hell they are. I mean, if you're talking about punches and bunches, this song has it all.
I mean, that riff is, I mean, I think it's as iconic as Smoke on the Water or Iron Man. Mm-hmm. I mean, it is a, you know, that is a metal riff. You know, that we all remember. I mean, it's just used so much in sports. Mariano yes. Rivera used to enter the game to Enter Sandman.
WWE
yeah.
uses it. Yeah.
It's a perfect intro to an album, definitely.
Yeah. Okay, that's round one. Now, of course, as any sports broadcast, you can't get too far into the action without hearing a word from our friends over at the Astrovert Podcast.
What's up, folks? It's Jake here from the Astrovert Podcast. Come join us as we play underplayed and undershared bands from across the United States and the world. We found local bands from the Midwest, Florida, the UK, New Zealand, and far, far beyond. Some of our recent favorite discoveries include Sprawl, Glitch Kingdom, City of Auburn, Flake, Michigan, and so many more. We feature rock news.
Rock news! Whoa!
News about rock, rocks, and getting rocked.
As well as discuss our band's journey toward finishing our forthcoming EP. Our first two singles, Last Call and Tides of Elephants, both out now. You can find the podcast on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hmm.
Thanks, Astroverts.
I wonder who we can match their EP up against.
We'll make our own.
Haymaker!
All right, it's time for round two, the Haymakers. So in this round, we'll select standout cuts from our own albums that we think are big, heavy punches in this head-to-head matchup. So why don't we start with you, Don? What do you got from Disintegration? Stop trying to hit me and hit me.
This is the title track from the album. Of course, it's called Disintegration.
Bit more like a slap fight, but you know, this is a weird comparison of albums to make. So we got to make sure and use context in our conversation here.
Yes. So yeah, this song has always felt more like a closer to me. Mm. And I mean, I think that's probably influenced by the way they do it live. It often ends, you know, the main set. So yeah, it's a song that really crescendos. It gets more and more intense. His voice gets more and more, I don't know what the word is, kind of angsty. Maybe not angsty. I don't know.
Desperate.
Yes. Yeah. Definitely, you know, one of my favorite vocal performances by Robert Smith. Some people think it's about suicide, and there's definitely references to it. You know, Robert Smith said, it's just a scream against everything falling apart and my right to quit with it when I want to. But yeah, you know, it just feels like a relationship disintegrating, or, you know, I mean, I guess any aspect of life kind of falling apart. Really dramatic and intense song.
Yeah, I mean, it's got those, the synth washes, and it's like cathedral-sized reverb here. It feels like everything is, you know, the whole gothic, whether they like that label or not, thing always has a churchy cathedral feel. But it does set the album's epic and melancholic tone. I think even at this stage in the album, it was needed to kind of really define what this is. Smith delivers lines about the inevitability of decay, the fading of beauty, that aging thing, you know, being 30, just a crotchety old man. God, I wish I was 30 again. It's kind of a slow motion sunset of a song. It's less rock and more emotional architecture.
I like that.
It definitely feels like it's from another place, place of degradation, rotting, and sadness. they do it well, and it's a punch to the gut more than a punch to the chin, you know.
Now, how are you going to counter that gut punch?
With a tuned down low end juggernaut to the jaw, we're going to do Sad But True. So that, as I mentioned, was tuned down to D. Bob Rock suggested that. They were playing everything in E, and I saw an interview where he said that he's asked the band, why do you play everything in E? And they're like, because that's the lowest note. And he's like, why don't you tune down to D? So I guess it was, I guess it was somewhat inspired by Soundgarden's sludgy Louder Than Love album before they really broke big. Lyrics explored the idea that we all have a dark side inside us, that duality of human nature, I'm your truth telling lies. And Hetfield explained it being about the inner voice that manipulates you. This is the fifth single from the album, but every drum hit, every riff, they just time like a sledgehammer on this song, and it was my personal favorite on the record when I was coming up. It's also been the favorite of other people, like Kid Rock, who I'm sure with permission, but ripped it off for American Badass or whatever. I remember whenever that would come on the radio at that time, I'm like, yeah, Sad But True's on, and then all of a sudden we'd get Kid Rock. I'm like, you bastard.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, there's just so many great riffs on this album. This one, you know, is another one that stands out. I mean, just awesome.
It's an iconic one, probably sport event stuff too. I mean, it is unmistakable when you hear it.
Would you say, is this more groove metal than
thrash? I think so.
Yeah, so I mean, you're slowing it down a little bit, giving it some space.
Room to breathe, yeah.
Yeah, but it really works.
Mm-hmm. And I mean, if Andy were here, he'd be talking about all the sellout stuff. But you know, I don't see it that way. I see it as a trying to expand, trying to do things, challenge yourself, do things you haven't done. And then that kind of tinny production on their previous albums. I mean, this one is just rumbles your guts.
Yeah.
How, You know, every song.
I mean, there's no, even the thrashier sounding songs on this album sound so much cleaner.
Better than.
Yeah. Yeah. There's no comparison.
Yeah.
All right. Moving on from round two to round three.
Coming, Mick.
This is a little different. I think, like, in a fight, you want to expose your opponent's weaknesses. So we're going to try to pick songs that might be the weakest on our opponent's albums. So what's your opponent cut?
So this was tough because I was really looking for something that was album ruining.
Mm-hmm.
Instead, I went with something that I think is a little, almost doesn't belong. So we're going to go with Love Song. This is a risky move.
Yeah.
The most straightforward track. I read it was written as a wedding gift for Mary Smith. Is that right, Dan?
Yeah, that's his
wife. I defer to you and on this. Okay.
Yep.
It's also the biggest hit. It was built around a hypnotic descending bass line. The lyrics are stripped down, declarations of devotion, I'll always love you. Its power lies in the restraint, with every instrument serving the emotional core of the song. But its intimacy disguised as pop. It's vulnerable. It's a classic, great song. One of my favorite Cure songs, because I'm a tourist. I'm not a real like Cure fan. I've learned to appreciate them. And I love this song. So it was tough for me to pick this one, but I just felt like it was the one that leaves all that disintegration behind for a moment. And in that respect, probably from fans' perspectives, this may have been considered a weak point, potentially also another song I absolutely love off the album is Pictures of You, and I know fans tend to not as much.
Yeah, well, it's funny that you pick, you know, the one song that probably drew people, you know,
into buying it.
But I do get what you're saying. It is, I guess the question is, do you see it as like a temporary relief from all the intensity, or right. is it really a disruption to the flow of the album?
A misstep, right?
Yeah, I think... Even though it is a pretty straightforward love song, it still kind of has like a melancholy vibe that makes it not too much of a shock to the system. Like Friday, yeah, I'm in Love would be out of place.
Right.
Or Why Can't I Be You or something like that.
I guess you could see him laying in his deathbed since he's an ancient 30 here and telling her he loves her as he's fading to death.
It's a fantastic bass line. I mean, that one is just a lot of fun. All right, my turn, huh?
Go for it.
This is also tough because, I just think the album is full of great tracks. So I went with Of Wolf and Man. Yeah, so... after I decided this was going to be kind of my counterpunch, I kind of regretted it because this song just fucking rocks.
These are both incredible albums, so yeah. From different places. So it's really hard to find super bad weaknesses,
Yeah. I mean, I guess I was going with just the werewolf stuff is kind of corny. And I mean, I know it's typical of metal to do kind of monstery things. It just seemed sort of metal cliche. And it felt like with this album, they were kind of moving on a little bit. I thought the lyrics might be getting more interesting and more personal. And this seems to be a deviation from that. But it is, so it is sort of, I guess, themes of kind of primal transformation. And I kind of a struggle with it.
Yes, it is. And Jason, the bassist, actually gets a vocal part. He's the
back to the meeting
guy.
Oh.
And then Hetfield echoes that. He uses animalistic raw production choices to match the themes. But yeah, it's about transforming into a werewolf, but it represents freedom and trusting your instincts. And I think maybe that comes back to this process of making this record, trusting their instincts to try something new. But there's also that metaphor for returning to your natural, untamed self, shapeshift, nose to the wind. But it's heavy, it's confident, and it's deeply connected to the themes of transformation. I think this band was transforming at the time. So yeah, that's on the surface, it seems like a stupid song, but when you dig in more, it doesn't seem so dumb after all. Well, I'm exhausted, Don. I mean, we've been... throwing haymakers and counterpunches for the last three rounds. I think it's time to take a break and then we'll get back to the action.
Excuse me,
I'd like to ask you a few questions.
It's time again for Deep Questions by Don. So both of these albums have songs that deal with dreams and nightmares. So, you know, Enter Sandman and The Cure's Lullaby. What are some of your dreams, dude?
I mean, you're the star of most of them, Don. But the one that comes to mind most is one I had in college. And I don't remember all the details, but it featured John Lennon. So I went back in time and met up with Jim Morrison. And then we were coming up with a plan to stop Lennon from being shot.
Wow.
It was really weird. Yeah. I told everybody, these were in the days when I kind of talked like this. Tell that story to people. Whoa, I had this dream about John Lennon.
Wow.
I wish I never talked like that or revealed it here. How about you, Don?
Well, you know, I'm not somebody who really believes in ghosts or anything, but for some reason, you know, they are in my dreams. And, you know, I do have, you know, some nightmares about ghosts.
Ghosts?
I have a thing, I don't know where it was or something, like growing up, somebody said, you know, if you ever encounter a ghost, just say you're dead.
I thought you were supposed to sit down at a potter's wheel with them and make a seductive pot. No?
I have dreams like those too.
That's how I handle ghosts.
But anyway, so sometimes in the, like, you know, I'll wake up and I'm yelling, you're dead. You're dead.
How's the wife like that?
But what it actually does disturb me, I've always had dreams about plane crashes where I'm like watching a plane kind of down. And have you ever seen the movie La Bamba?
Yes.
Of course, like supposedly Richie Valens like always dreamt of plane crashes. And of course, that's, you know, how he meets his end. So I hope it's not foreshadowing or prophetic or whatever. All right. Well, what's going on in your dreams? Let us know on Instagram and Facebook or leave a comment on our website, albumnerds.com.
Finish them.
Okay. It's time for round 4, closing cuts. So the closing song is equally as important as the opening, maybe.
You want to end with a bang, not with a whimper.
And, you know, but sometimes the whimper is what you need. So it should wrap things up in a way that feels satisfying and leaves the listener thinking about the music long after it ends, or even taking it so far as to wanting to just start that record over again. So Don, your closing cut, bring it.
All right. Well, you'll like the title of this one. It's called Untitled.
Should have called it Lazy. So his voice sounds so much stronger here than in other songs. So much like there's I think it's an intentional sort of confidence in what he's saying.
Mm-hmm. So, you know, I mentioned Disintegration kind of feeling like the end of the album. I feel like the two cuts that follow, it feels more like an epilogue or a postscript or something. You know, it's like Disintegration was the climax and then this is sort of reflecting on it. And this is all about sort of regret, I think, unresolved feelings and not communicating them. But it, you know, it has, you know, again, the bass six, and even kind of guitarmanized, if you will, you know, so yes. I mean, like two things I love, guitarmony and bass six. I like it a lot.
There's some kind of confidence in it, and it's like this quietly devastating exit, not offering answers, only echoes, and the answers are your own to come up with, which I think is why it's untitled. So it does make sense if you're listening that this is your story. Kind of that's the feel I got from it. That we all have our own story and it ends however we want it to end. And it sort of it reinforces the central theme of the album, which I think is emotional truths often go unspoken and stop doing that.
All right, we'll beat that, jackass. No, I'm just kidding.
I'm not sure I can. This is from the Metallica record. This one is called The Struggle Within. So this one kicks off with a military snare roll, which there's a couple of those on the album, and launches into one last burst of more kind of a thrashy thing. It's about the battle in your own mind, mental scars, self-sabotage, unresolved inner tension. Not musically as deep as the other tracks in my mind. It's fittingly intense conclusion, short, fast, and unflinching, but feels a little watered down. I think for my money, I would have preferred even like Unforgiven to be the closing track, because that is very lyrically powerful and mm-hmm. unexpected. That would have been, for me, a great way to end the album, where you're like, holy shit, what did I just hear from Hetfield's heart? I'm going to give it away a little bit. I think you might have me on this one, Don.
Yeah, I mean, it's a shame. Like with this album, I mean, there's just real standout cuts, you know, and so it makes some of the but it makes some of ones like this not feel quite so great, you know, but it's only because they're up against, you know, Sad But True. But yeah. It fits the theme of the album, you know, so I guess it's, you know, sort of summarizes things, you know, kind of self-doubt and internal struggle. You know, it's a solid, kind of thrashier than some of the others. But it's a solid song.
But is it an incredible closer? That's the question. All right, time for that final round. Round five.
X Factor KO.
Every great album has certain elements that we wanted to address besides just the songs. We're calling it X Factors. We'll get into five of them as we move through this discussion, and this will count as one round. So let's start with the digging factor. Do you dig it?
Can you dig it?
Is this an enjoyable listening experience overall? Each album. What do you think?
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think both albums are, you know, fantastic, and, you know, I would never, I think, turn down listening to them. I mean, they're both intense, but Disintegration is kind of more atmospheric and maybe more emotional and introspective, whereas like the Black album it's intense, but it's more direct. It's
With a couple of songs of emotional vulnerability and stuff, especially the ballads.
But yeah, I mean, the Black album is, you know, there's riffs, you know, that are just memorable, you know, and, you know, The Cure is a longer play or something.
Yeah. I mean, I dig both. Obviously, I've loved the Black album, and I'm not one of those Metallica sold out guys. I even enjoy the Load and Reload for what they are, the Alternica period, as some called it. But, and Disintegration, I've really learned to appreciate and love for its own merits. So yeah, both of these are enjoyable. Both of these are albums that I would go to for different reasons. It just kind of depends on which one would I play more, which one is easier to fit more moods, and that might be the Black album. All right, so next up, very important, killer to filler ratio.
That is killer material.
Are all the songs strong? Like, are there serious weak points? We've kind of established there aren't on these albums. They're good in general. So, Don, what do you think?
Both albums are very long. I mean, Disintegration, even more. It's like around 71 minutes. I mean, this is supposed to be the proper track list. That's how it was released as a CD and as a cassette. But the original vinyl, they actually eliminated Homesick and Last Dance. But I think Disintegration, I think, is more steady. So I don't think there's as much of a discrepancy between like the great songs and the not so great songs. Whereas, you know, with the Black album, I mean, the great is so great that it makes, you know, the less exciting tracks, you know, seem even worse. But both of these albums offer something to get acquainted with, right? You know, like the ones that don't grab you now will eventually grab you, I think.
Yeah. I mean, I kind of feel the same. Like, I broke it into tears, and not the kind that Robert Smith cries, but T-I-E-R-S. And Disintegration, like the S tier, the all-time classics. I have Disintegration, Pictures of You, and Love Song. A tiers, I have Fascination Street, Lullaby, Prayers for Rain, Plain Song, a few in the B tier. But the only C tier is the Untitled, the soft sigh at the end of the album, even though I still think it's a great closer for the record. I think it's very appropriate closer. And with Metallica, we've got Enter Sandman and Sad But True up in that top S tier. But I've got three C tier songs, Good But Not Essential, like Don't Tread on Me, which I love the patriotic militaristic edge. It doesn't quite feel right on the album. My Friend of Misery was supposed to be an instrumental. I think I would have preferred that approach, because I used to put an instrumental on every album. And The Struggle Within has good energy, but it's not very memorable compared to the Giants. And of course, you know, the A-tier songs like The Unforgiven and Nothing Else Matters, two incredible ballads. Again, a tough one. Yeah. Great songs. Like you said, Don, it's more about, are there some that could have shortened the album up and we'd be okay? Mm-hmm. All right. So next up, You Really Get Me.
God, You Really Get Me.
does it connect with you and connect with the audience, like emotionally? Like, that's important sometimes too. Good memories. What you got?
Yeah. Well, I mean, both definitely do. I mean, I don't know. I mean, it's unfair because I've been listening to The Cure Disintegration since I was, you know, 12 or 13 or something, you know, so I have such a deep relationship with it, and it probably sort of affects the, you know, the kind of person that I am, but I do feel like I gravitate more to the melancholy than to the anger. So it definitely speaks to me more, but I actually like that this Metallica album has some elements of that, you know, like the Unforgiven, you know, is kind of Cure-ish.
Yeah. I mean, it's vulnerable.
Yeah.
And James Hetfield actually harmonizes with himself. Yeah. So Metallica, it explores anger and trauma and isolation and rebellion, all very male anger stuff that a lot of us experience in our formative years for unknown reasons. It's just part of learning to control your animal side, I guess, as you grow up. So there's those things to connect with. And I really hearken back when I need a high energy boost or I'm thinking about my youth. Again, Metallica comes to mind. But Disintegration is more emotional devastation put to music, and loss, regret, mental illness, disillusionment, all handled with poetic depth and sincerity, and such beautiful songs like Love Song and Pictures of You that have hope amongst the pain. That's hard to not connect to as well, especially as you're become emotionally more matured. So yeah, that's a tough one too. But I'm actually leaning the Cure on that one in terms of truly connecting, not just being angry. Because that's an easy emotion. That's the easiest one. Okay, so it comes down to rematches. Do you want to listen to these albums again?
Hey, yo, pal, you said there weren't going to be no rematch.
Yeah. You know, like I said, you know, even the songs that don't stand out, there's like something there that you'll learn to love the more and more you listen to it.
Yeah, I mean, high replay value on both.
Yeah.
You know, like working out, driving, that kind of thing, Metallica. But if you want to sit down and get up in your feels, it's all about The Cure. This is a great week, a very emotional yo-yo, though. And when you're like, I was going back and forth, I'd listen to Metallica, then I'd listen to The Cure, and I'm like, what am I feeling?
Yeah, I think the only deterrent really to re-listening is just the length of both albums.
And my legacy will become yours.
Okay, so what's the legacy of these things? And this is the last of our X factors, because you know, we're really trying to measure these things as toe-to-toe as possible. So does it continue to influence music, listeners, culture? What's the lasting power of these records?
Well, I mean, for both fan bases, you know, I think these are obviously huge albums, really shapes, you know, how these bands are viewed. I mean, I think the Metallica one might have maybe alienated some of the more thrash-oriented fans.
And 30 million albums sold, other people came to the table.
Exactly. Yeah. I do think that Metallica might win on this one, because I feel like Disintegration kind of marks the end of that kind of new wave era. And I think synths were sort of becoming uncool, and really the next several years of rock music was hard, and it was guitar driven. And I think the Black Album is a good reason why that happened.
Yeah, I mean, it's a juggernaut, and it, you know, I really think it's a timing thing too. I mean, their timing was impeccable. Get more melodic, get more accessible. So I think they accidentally had hits. I don't think that was the intention at all. But with that grunge movement, I think harder rock was more palatable. And this was a slightly less hard version of Metallica, and had a huge influence. And Disintegration, definitive goth rock album, continues to influence dream pop, post-rock, shoegaze, emo. And it kind of made The Cure's global career. I think this album is part of why they're able to continue to tour and release records and have continued to grow their fan base with every generation. So, okay. A lot to consider here, Don.
Got to go through my scorecard.
Let's send it back to the center of the ring and hear tonight's results.
Don, what'd you get?
Well, I'll just go through quickly. I gave round one to Metallica. begrudging. I'm surprised that I did that, but it's just hard to argue against Enter Sandman. I also gave round two to Metallica, a little early run with Sad But True. But round three goes to The Cure with Love Song. Okay. Round four goes to, you know, the ending cut. And then round five, surprisingly, no, I went with The Cure just because I think it is a more consistent album. So The Cure wins 3-2. It was close.
Wow.
How about you, dude?
Yeah, I also gave Metallica the first round. I gave Metallica the second round. I gave The Cure the third round, unfortunately. And that closing track, I also gave The Cure the fourth round. This was very surprising to me because I grew up with this Metallica album, and The Cure, it was just some eye-rolly crybaby stuff to me that I never listened to until the last 20 years. But the X Factors, The Cure had a stronger killer to filler ratio, deeper emotional resonance, and lasting legacy in alternative and indie scenes. I think is that would go more to Metallica, but I think The Cure actually had the edge there. So I gave them round five.
Wow.
I know.
So 3-2. Wow.
Yeah, so The Cure wins, man.
Wow.
We have a new champion of the world.
It's like on Celebrity Deathmatch in the old days when those claymation dudes were fighting each other and they'd have the weak guy become vicious and beat the tough guy. That's what this feels like. Like I went over it and over it. Wow. I don't even know what to do with myself. We made it. Five rounds of pulse pounding action in this very first Album Nerds Record Rumble. The Clash of the Titans. The Cure, Disintegration, defeating the mighty Metallica. Congratulations.
Can you dig it? Can you dig it? Can you dig it?
All right, well, we spent all week, you know, training for this, you know, for this big fight.
I just handed it to you.
Well, I actually went to Russia, and I was, like, lifting those big logs going through the snow.
Rocky IV style. Very nice.
Did you have time to dig anything else?
I really didn't, but I made a bit of an effort anyway. So let me dig into my oversized jock strap and see what I can find. So I went with... I'm not really a big fan per se, but I always do check out their albums. A new one from Ghost, Skeletta. Oh,
you're dead.
Ghost, the Swedish rock band formed in 2006. Theatrical blend of hard rock, heavy metal, and pop. Fronted by Tobias Forge, who assumes these different personas, like these like kind of Catholic Church type things. Papa Emeritus, Cardinal Copia. Each album introduces a new Papa character, and this new album is marking the debut of Papa 5, Perpetua. Good God. So this album was just released April 25th, 2025. It's their sixth studio album. Let's listen to a little bit of Satanized. I've never really known what to do with Tobias Forge's vocal style.
Wow.
Have you not heard Ghost before?
I guess I haven't really listened to them before.
It's eerie. You might actually like it. It's kind of eerie and haunted sounding. It's a little too occult, Satan-y for me most of the time. But I do enjoy the impact that the band has had. And yeah, interesting band. And I always do give them enough respect to check out their new releases.
Cool.
So trying to get back in my comfort zone and maybe make it up to Metallica for handing the win to Robert Smith.
To the Mope Dopes.
Yeah, Mope Dopes. And for my vinyl collection, Metallica's Garage Inc. released November 24th, 1998. That double album, triple on the LP I have, three LPs from 2011. It's cover songs that pay tribute to the band's influences, including Thin Lizzy, Diamond Head, Merciful Fate, and Queen. So why don't we listen to a little bit of Stone Cold Crazy. And the album kind of shows their versatility, blending punk, new wave of British heavy metal, classic rock, all the influences over the years that put the fuel in their tank. But yeah, I'm going to have to listen to a bunch of other Metallica albums this week to heal myself from getting beat up by The Cure. How about you, Don?
We've done a couple albums by them. Arcade Fire is back. They've got an album coming out May 9th called Pink Elephant. It's their seventh studio album. They were formed in Montreal back in 2001. Here's the title track, Pink Elephant. Yeah.
You just can't put the hankies down, can you? You cry, baby.
This album's actually produced by another French-Canadian, Daniel Lanois, you know, who, of course, produced the Joshua Tree and many other things. So another one, I guess this group has been around for, you know, quite a while. They're called Lord Huron, but I ended up hearing a track called Nothing I Need. I think it's a standalone single for now. I'm not sure that there's an album coming.
Do you like it?
I do like it.
You dig it? Yeah.
Lord Huron is a band formed in Los Angeles in 2010, mainly singer-songwriter Ben Schneider. So here's that song, Nothing I Need.
You know, Don, maybe if you started eating meat, you'd be a little happier. Get some iron in your blood.
Yeah. All right, well, what are you digging? Let us know. Join us on the socials, Facebook, Instagram, and Threads, and also our website, albumnerds.com.
You fight great, but I'm a great fighter. Huh? You ready?
Well, it's about that time in the show when I'm reminded of the words of Muhammad Ali, great boxer, fighter, pugilist. Here we go. If you even dream of beating me, you'd better wake up and apologize. That's kind of how I feel about my choice today. With that in mind, let's bring out my friend and yours, the Wheel of Albumgeddon, to find out what types of albums will be in our next bout.
When chest-thumping riffs and radio domination collide, you get a battle for the ages. Next time on Record Rumbles, it's the Battle of the Butt-Rock Behemoths, where two arena-filling titans go toe-to-toe in a showdown of massive hooks, emotional growls, and fist-pumping anthems.
Butt-Rock Behemoths, great. Yeah, so we'll be pitting two albums toe-to-toe in that slang term of butt-rock, which is used to refer to a style, pejoratively, to refer to a style of mainstream hard rock or post-grunge music that is seen as formulaic, overly macho, or emotionally shallow sometimes. But apparently it comes from the idea that many of these bands were featured on rock radio stations that used slogans like, "Nothing but rock."
It just rocks.
Yeah, which led to the butt rock. So, yeah, that should be an interesting matchup, especially trying to dig into some of the bigger names there. And I'm sure we'll find some fine albums.
Never made it as a wise man. All right, well, what album should be in the Battle of Butt Rock Behemoths? What else are you listening to? Email us at podcast@albumnerds.com. Follow us on Facebook, Instagram, Threads, and Blue Sky at Album Nerds. And visit albumnerds.com to suggest topics for the show, peruse the Hall of Fame, and listen to all 289 episodes. And the best way to support the show is to share it. Please subscribe, rate, and review on your favorite podcast app.
Thank you once again for joining us here on the Album Nerds podcast and bearing with us through our record rumbles. We'll catch you next time with some beautiful butt rock.
It's the eye of the tiger. It's the thrill of the fight rising.
You know, if you had done that song for Rocky III, Rocky would have lost, brother. That does not have the right energy. More like the eye of the kitten.